My name is Terry Williams, and I am from Texas. Who guessed? Actually, I don't really have a Texas accent. I could if I wanted to. I could talk like this if you wanted me to. I could do that. Or I could be from West Texas, and I could talk like this. Or East Texas, but we call that behind the pine curtain, so we don't want to talk like that. Love you. Love you a whole bunch. I'm actually imitating my niece, who talks just like that, but we love her. Stacy, we love you, wherever you are. We love you. But I live in Texas, and that's where I've lived for all of my life, save when my parents were very young and got married very young and moved to Kansas. But they got smart really fast, and we did move to Texas, which was their hometown. You're going to never guess where I live in Texas. Joan can tell you, because we talk about this a lot. I live on a what in Texas, Joan?
Big ranch.
I live on a ranch in Texas, and yes, we do have cows, and we do have horses. And let me tell you this, we're about to get a miniature donkey. I'm going to name him DJ, and if you want to know that story, find me later, and I'll tell you why. We have dogs, and we don't have any cats, because my dog runs them off. And but we have a wonderful life there, lived there for a very long time. My husband's a veterinarian. How about that? Everybody's dream job when they're a child, right? No, it's messy and dirty and bloody. And three adult children and two other children who happen to be connected with those children. So we have five. One in heaven, by the way. I had a premature daughter that lived for 5 days. Her name was Kaylee Ray, and she's with Jesus. Darn it. And so someday I'll see her again. I've been doing pro-life work for almost 30 years.
Wow.
You too can start when you're 12. I'm one of CareNet Center Services Specialists, which is a fancy way of saying consultant, and which we've done. And Ms. Joan as well serves with me. There are seven of us that are Center Services Specialists. Plus I get to do, which is so fun, trainings for centers. And get to go and visit with you and stay in sweet little cottages next to a golf course. Or go to Bemidji, Minnesota. Where, by the way, Paul Revere Paul Bunyan and Babe the Big Blue Ox live. And that was really exciting. And I get to do that sort of thing. I also, for those of you who may not know this, and you'll know this perhaps if you come to a workshop I do on Friday, I also do public policy work in Texas. Just a fancy way of saying from time to time I get to influence the pro-life laws in our state. And if you follow that, which you should, pro-life laws, you'll know in Texas we're doing a pretty good job. Can I get an amen? But we've got a lot of work yet to do. So we are today going to talk about, at a very basic level, say basic, at a very basic level, because this is sort of the new director's track, or just, you know, just kind of getting it together. But we're going to talk about pregnancy decision coaching. It's kind of our new buzzword. You might call it advocating. You can. You can do that still. You might call it peer counseling. Look at your neighbor and say, oh, good, because that's what we call ours. Right, you can still do that. You can still do that. It's okay, but we're kind of going this way. It's the new buzzword. At one point, I told my husband, I think I'm going to get a life coaching degree. And he just looked at me like this. Isn't that what you do with me all the time? So Anyway, and it's a good thing to have. I'm not... dishing it or anything. But pregnancy decision coaching, reaching abortion mind and abortion vulnerable clients. There's my name. There's what I do. There's my email address. Again, it's very what? It's going to be pretty basic. I thought we would start this morning by talking a little bit about something that you and I talk about every single day if we're doing Pregnancy Resource Center work. Now, raise your hand if you are at the executive level, either center director or executive director, CEO of your center. How many of we have? Goodness, not as many as I kind of thought. How about if you are a client services director or manager? Train your volunteers. Yes, yes. I love you because I can't do your job. Okay, but I train you to do your job. And I do an okay job. Yeah. And raise your hand if you are one of the coach, advocate, volunteer, peer counselor, person. There, wow, look at that. Look at that. How about a board member? Do we have any board members that are trying? Thank you, ma'am. Thank you, ma'am. Yes, we, oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, I love board members. I really like board members, especially since I am one now. I really, really like them because we forget sometimes that they're volunteers, too. So that's kind of a little free commercial. Joan?
We have more people who want to come, and we're asking you if there are empty seats in a row to move over so people don't have to crawl over to the city. We don't want to get people to ask.
Okay, now we're going to have to do this so efficiently and a little more quiet, because I let you start talking, then you're going to want to talk more than me, and I don't like that unless you take me to coffee. That sounds fun. Oh. All right, so any empty seats next to you, please raise your hand. We have one here, one up here. Okay, so okay, we could let in about 10 more people, and handouts are almost gone. No. I'm going to put them together. No, ma'am, I'm good. I'm good. Okay. All right. I began doing volunteer peer counseling in 1990. And I went to a local pregnancy center. At the time, we called it Women's Pregnancy Center. Hello. I always thought that was a little odd. Women are the only ones who can get pregnant. But I did volunteer there, loved it, loved my director. Her name was Tricia Edwards. She was there for a very long time, little British lady. And she was just precious. I did a shift on Thursdays from 10 to 2. And I loved being there and loved being a part of it. Prepared myself to see my first client in a college town, my very first abortion-minded client, when she brought in her jar of urine in a pickle jar, because, you see, back then in the day, you brought in your first morning urine and you brought it in whatever you could. I was just amazed at the first college student that brought her urine sample in an empty bottle of beer. Bottle, but that was shocking to me. But being, you know, Southern Baptist and all, and so I. But anyway, she brings it in. It's positive. I smile at her and I say, "So, do you have a moment for us to talk about your thoughts and your feelings about this positive pregnancy test?" And she said, "Just give me a minute." And she turned around in the seat and she grabbed her purse. And in her purse, she had one of the, now, 1990, right? She didn't grab her phone. In her purse, she had one of those little pocket calendars. How many of you still carry one because you're stubborn? And she had a little pocket calendar, and she flipped it open to the month that she thinks she might have gotten pregnant. It was full of college activities, but it was also full of something else. She said, "Now, tell me when you think I might have gotten pregnant." I said, "Darling, I don't know. I wasn't there." And she said, when we looked at the calendar and she was very intense about looking at it, and she was counting and shaking her head, and then she counted, and then she shook her head and she went, and then she counted it. I'm serious. This is serious. I'm as serious as a heart attack. And she's just counting. And I looked at her. I said, "Well, can you tell me what it is you're doing?" Because she's not crying. She's not throwing a fit. She's not weeping. She's not shocked. She's counting. And she said, "Well, you see, I've had sex this month. I'm involved with four different guys. And I've had sex with all four of them this month. And I'm just counting to see which one I think might be the father." Well, I was curious by then. Man, tell me a story. And basically it was this. You see, the was, oh, that would be okay if he was the father. I mean, I might choose to still be in a relationship with him. This was, she didn't even remember his name. In fact, she scratched her head because she couldn't remember who she had had, you know, the guy's name even that she'd had sex with. And this was, Lord, what would that child look like is what's going on in her mind. And this was, aha, I've been wanting him for a long time and maybe now I have him. That was my first experience. I don't know what your first experience was in the counseling room, and that's the term we're going to use, in the counseling room with your first abortion-minded client was. Maybe it was tears. Maybe it was like the girl I coached one time who fell on the couch, curled up in the fetal position, and cried for 2 solid hours, and I just sat there handing her tissues. I don't know, but we've all raised your hand, yes, if you have had one at least abortion-minded client. Please tell me you have. Now, we know, we're going to define it real quickly, an abortion-minded client is a client who it is her mind that her first choice is to abort. Let's say that together. In her mind, it's her first choice to abort. And so we see them, don't we? Try to reach out to them, and we're going to talk about that this morning. But we want to talk about that second definition, and that's the abortion vulnerable client, which in my opinion, my friends, is the client who is probably the most critical. It's that client who, in someone else's mind, it should be her first choice to abort. Does that make sense to you? Rollins told us typically about 40%, and I've even heard higher, that it's typically that other person's choice is who? Who? Say it a little louder so the tape can hear. Father of the baby. The FOB. We can almost cuss. Almost. A little. Okay? Yeah. The FOB. Many times, oftentimes, you know all the people that it influences. It's abortion vulnerable. Let me tell you something that really gripped me about 10 years ago when I had, well, no, I'm not telling you the truth. I think it was about 6 years ago when I had a college age. My youngest daughter was in college. Her name is Whitney. And Whitney is a true millennial. Her picture is in the Millennial Handbook. Everything. Dr. Kathy Cook would have a heyday with Whitney. But I asked her one night on the phone, Whitney, why would one of your friends, even raised in a Christian home, which we learned today from Rollin, maybe it was new news or not, but we learned today is pretty critical, that why would a girl choose to have or even think about an abortion? Now, this is a girl, little girl, that was born in 1991, years after Roe, years after the law that changed the face of the earth, the planet. And she looked at me, and these are the words that she said, because she can. Look at your neighbor and say, because she can. Do you understand that even in this room we have a generation of women and men who have never grown up without abortion being legal? And the scary part of it is, my friends, is that they think it's their right. And you know what? It is. Legally, it is. Fight this battle every day. But those are those, in my opinion, those abortion vulnerable. And so I think they're just as key. We're going to say a lot about abortion minded today, but abortion vulnerable is always there. So my philosophy, and I would like for you to adopt it if you so choose, is every girl, every woman, every teenager, every millennial, every college freshman, every 30-year-old woman, every 40-year-old woman who walks through their door is abortion vulnerable. Why? Because she can. So let's look for a moment, and I've got slides. You can follow them in your notes, in your handout. You can make notes on it, or you can look up here. But we're going to go through this part pretty quickly. And I said I was going to start my stopwatch, Joan, and then I didn't do it. So let me look out here. It's right here, and I'm going to start. All right, we're going to look at some statistics, some abortion statistics. You can read them there. Raise your hand if one just kind of jumps out at you and you want to read it out loud for me. Raise your hand. Or someone just yell it out. Anyone? How about 18% of all pregnancies in the United States end in abortion? Now, I think that's a low end, but we know from statistics that's true. I put it down there. These are CareNet's facts on abortion from January of 2015. One that always makes me really sad and shake my head. How about for you? The bottom one, the third one. 61% of women experiencing abortion are already, what? Say it. Mothers. And half have had a previous abortion. Right. Of women experiencing abortion in 2010, 15% were teenagers, 57% were ages 20 to 29, and so forth. According to a study by Abortion Researchers, 8 days passed. Now, Raleigh mentioned 9. I'm telling you, maybe that's changed, but this is the information I got. So I've heard between 7 and 9. Can we agree on that number? 7 to 9 days pass on average between the time a woman first suspected pregnancy to having a positive test. But you know what? We have some hope because the statistics don't have to stay there, do they? Across measures, abortions have what? Say the word. Decreased dramatically. In 2011, there were 1.06 million abortions, a nearly 34% reduction since 1990. Can I get an amen there? CareNet has some statistics for us, and here's just a statement I thought was interesting for us to look at. Now, if there was an Associated Press report, and that was the report that was before us that said it has dropped. So if the statistics from the Associated Press survey are correct, the number of abortions has fallen 12% nationwide in the past 5 years. From 2002 to 2011, the abortion number fell 13%. Now look at each other and say, we're doing something right. Absolutely. How many of you agree, though, we need to do more right? Absolutely. That's why you're here today, right? These are the statistics I like the best, except for in your packet, you have the 2015, and they were just produced, and I didn't have them before I did this slide. But I'm assured that the number is about 200,000 more. I mean, about 20,000 more. So we're pretty good. Of the women who came into a CareNet center considering abortion, 388,691 chose life. Where did they come into? A CareNet pregnancy center. So 8 out of 10 choosing women visiting a CareNet center who are at risk for abortion choose life. Then there's some more statistics there. I found this one very compelling. You'll notice at the bottom of this slide there is a website, Abundant Life Blog. I got this off that blog. So again, I don't want to sit here for a long time, but I found it very compelling when it talked about the rule, and that's less than 100%, 1,000 persons per square mile. How many of you would say you live in a rural area? Okay, and then it goes on to say abortion-minded clients with positive pregnancy tests who made a life decision. These are the statistics that you send in to us. This is what we do with them. Okay, and then suburban, how many of you live in a suburban area by those standards? And then urban, how many of you live in the big urban area? It's not as many. Are you trying to get if you were rural? What do you see, Joan? Wow, right. That's most of you are rural. Am I saying that word right? Rural? I think so. Okay. So there's that impact report. And again, I want to state this. We're not going to sit on ultrasounds, but here, most of these statistics happened, if you'll notice, when there was an ultrasound. U.S. doesn't mean United States. It means ultrasound. When an ultrasound was performed, then it was increased. But remember that ultrasound is just a tool by which you can use to show them that window to the womb, per se. I did Pregnancy Resource Center coaching, counseling, peer advocacy for a long time without an ultrasound and felt as if we were successful. It's a great tool, but again, it's just a tool. Now, this may be a picture of you by Friday, right? lot of things going on there. A lot of things. As Polly says, some of you who are new and old are looking like this. Right. Right. I've been told quite often that when you speak to me, it's like drinking from a water hose. But we'll slow down the trickle a little bit and try to get you to just focus. I want to tell you what my goal is for you today. It's twofold. And the first one's sort of silly, but it's who I am. The first one is this, is that you feel as if you're valued in this movement. That maybe I've looked you in the eye at some point and smiled at you, gotten a little close to you, and you feel as if you're valued. If you can leave here feeling valued, then I've done my job, really. And then the second one is that you just take away one thing that you can use. Because I'm going to tell you, my friends, we can't really do much more than what we can do. My daddy used to always tell me, you see, I was the type of a girl who really was always trying to save everything. Caterpillars, grasshoppers, puppies, brothers. Never was able to do that. Then it moved to friends. And friends' friends. Then it moved to boyfriends. Then it moved to my own children. I'm a saver. Are you a saver? I don't mean saving money because I don't do that very well. I mean saving of souls and people. My daddy, when I would be frustrated or cry because someone didn't do what I told them to do, like my brothers or my boyfriends, he would look at me and he would say, Terry Kay. Yeah, that's what he called me. See, I'm from Texas. Terry Kay. He would say, Terry Kay, you can only do what you can only do. And then he'd look at me with those eyes that you listen to and he would say, but you better do it. But you better do it. Everyone hold our hand up. You know, I've heard this illustration, and I hope you can put it back down again, because that's going to, you know, some of you haven't done weights in a while. It's going to hurt. I'll hold mine. I was given this illustration once, and I thought that it just made a whole lot of sense to me. Uh-oh. Sorry. You know, if we try to do more than we can do, if I try to get into my hand more M&Ms than I can fit into the palm of my hand, then eventually I'm going to get too many M&Ms. And what's going to happen to those precious M&Ms? They're going to fall on the floor. Now, I've not had sugar for 6 months. I mean, for 6 weeks, so I'm not going to eat any M&Ms this week, okay? So they're going to fall through my fingertips, right? If I try to do more than I can do, in the counseling room, in the advocacy room, in the coaching room, things are going to fall through the cracks. And the most important thing is exactly what I said I really wanted you to take out of this place this morning. And that was that you felt valued. But if I'm trying to check off too many boxes and trying to say too many things and share too many facts and share too much information to that client, then the real important things, like she's valued and I need to listen to her and her story is important, more important than mine, shocking, then it just falls through the cracks. So what I want us to talk today about is doing five things well. Say that with me, five things well. They're basic, again, remember? But I think that they're important. And they start outside of the counseling room, outside of that wonderful place where you take them and you share with them. It starts outside of it. Because you see, if you don't do what you can do outside of the Pregnancy Resource Center, the Pregnancy Health Center, the Crisis Center, whatever you call it, then it doesn't matter what happens on the inside. It'll fall flat. So we're going to do five things well. First thing we're going to do is we're going to prepare. And when we prepare, we're going to be amazed. But prepare is capitalized for all the right reasons, because it is important that we remember we must prepare. There are several points there. We're going to hit some highlights. How many of you have a dedicated time of prayer in your pregnancy resource center, your pregnancy center, your center, every single morning that you are open? Keep your hands up. How many of you include that when you change shifts for the afternoon shift? You pray then too. Put your hand down if you don't. Ooh, what, would you consider that? Is that a tip for you? So if you have a shift in the morning and then after lunch you have a shift in the afternoon or evening, do you re-pray? Why not? Keep your hands up if you pray. How many of you are a board member and your board prays consistently for the work of the center day by day? Put your hands down if you're a board member. Do you do that? Thank you, ma'am. How many of you have a dedicated prayer chain? I mean, we may call it something different, right? But you have a prayer chain where you send things out. Absolutely. Okay, you don't gossip on that now, do you? You keep all things confidential now, don't you? Nod like this, because that's very important to me. Yes, you do. But prayer is important, am I right? If it's not, take that away. If you're not praying in one of those three ways, take that away with you. That's important. You should have in place, and I would love to help you. Joan would love to help you put some policies and procedures in place that direct and guide you on how to reach the abortion mind and the abortion vulnerable. Because if we plan to succeed, we're going to what? Succeed. We don't plan, we're going to fail. So, coming up with some direct policies and procedures about how we're going to reach them, how we're going to speak to them, what our website's going to look like. We'll get to that throughout the morning. All right? How about training? In your training, do you skip over that abortion chapter because it's a little uncomfortable? Do you say inappropriate things? Do you not use the right types of materials? Love to help and point you that way. A word about training, please. I know that some of you had gotten word that we were working on redoing and revamping Serving with Care and Integrity. How many of you had heard that before? Well, I let the cat out of the bag there, didn't I, Joan? No, but everyone, we kind of knew it. We still are. And I promise you, because I was the project manager for that, so I promise you we still are, but we put it on hold to work on another project, and that was our Making Life Disciples, which is so exciting, so buy that, okay? It's coming. I promise you it's coming, and it's going to rock your world in terms of training. But do you have specific materials that you use? Do you have an agenda, and is there a part of that agenda? Some of you are numbers people. You want to know how much. You need to be spending at least a half a day just talking about reaching abortion-minded clients and coaching them in your center. Okay, so training. But might I say this, for some of you may not think about it. Board members, raise your hand. It's very personal in here. I'm sorry, but it hurts feelings. How many of you volunteers and staff members, board members, put your hands down? I feel like I'm playing Simon Says. How many of you volunteers and executive directors and client services directors would just be absolutely thrilled if you had a board member sit in on your volunteer training? Yeah. Why not? All right? One of the reasons why is so that they get it. They get it. Yeah, don't you? Isn't that what you want? They just don't get it, or they do get it. I've had several executive directors walk up to me this week, introduce their board member or board chair to me, and say, as they walk past, Terry, he gets it. You know, that's exciting. All right. So bringing your board chair in or going through a training with them, having everyone who comes in contact with one of these precious clients that God sends to you in a divine appointment. That's even people who count diapers. Why not have them go through all of volunteer training, which would be my suggestion, but if you don't have time or energy or resources, at least part of it, right? Is that a takeaway? I hope so. So training, okay? Practice, practice, practice. Now, this is stuff I like a lot. In fact, I sort of like get off on it. I love role play. Just like I was trying to save babies and save grasshoppers and caterpillars when I was a little girl, I also like to put on plays and act things out. Now, who's shocked by that? Excuse me. If you are training your volunteer staff, your board members and your personnel, are you practicing with them how to answer those tough questions? You're saying, we don't really have time, Terry. They're there all the time. Really, they're there seeing clients constantly. Is there not 15 minutes prior to their shift or 15 minutes after or during an in-service time or when they're sitting around chatting about absolutely nothing? You could ask them to do some role play. If you need some role play scenarios, Joan and I have got some. We probably have a whole list of them we'd love to send to you. So please take advantage of that. I have a sheet that has 27 or 30 role play scenarios. I'd love to send those to you. And then also being current. You know, we live in a social networking age, do we not? So I was challenged this week on Monday, and I don't have a Pregnancy Resource Center or Pregnancy Center website. But I was challenged as a center services specialist that when I go to a pregnancy center and do a training, I always look at their website and I check things out like, is everything spelled correctly? Or are they being, you know, legally compliant? But what about if I think for a moment that I'm the FOB, there's a word again, and I am on that website. Are you uncomfortable? Would you come to my center? I'm not sure, because most of our centers have pictures of women walking through fields of flowers. The only thing my husband does when we walk through the field of flowers is he constantly is picking up rocks. Mark, stop, we're walking, and he's picking up rocks. The ranch thing and tractors and that kind of thing. Is it friendly to all the clients we want to serve? Is it a little too cheesy and happy? You know. Again, I'm a walking commercial for CareNet, but why not? They pay me the big bucks. But why not take advantage of our templates that we have for our website? They're not very expensive, I think, by standards, the world standards. But take a look at it. Send it to me, your website. Ask me to give you a few suggestions. I, from time to time, love to give my opinion. And I'll be glad to share that with you from that standpoint. Give us direction and we'll be glad to do that. Okay? All right. So prepare to be amazed. The second of our five things we're going to do well is to be intentional. I want to talk for a moment about the phone call that you receive. And again, I have you kind of raise your hand so I can know where you are, but also raise your hand so that you can be aware of what we're doing in other centers. And if you're not doing this, it'll spark something in your brain to go, haven't done that. Is your receptionist who answers client calls and takes appointment, is she as well trained as the advocate that's been coming in on Thursdays from 10 to 2 for the last 10 years? Should she be? Not if you agree with me. Yes. She absolutely, positively should be. Now remember, again, my friends, this is basic aha stuff. And sometimes our executive directors come in and they've not had a lot of experience, our new ones, they've not had a lot of experience in actual in-house or in counseling room. So again, oh, And they're going to go back and they're going to say, are we training them? Well, they get a basic training. No, are they getting a full training? Because once again, we know that we're getting calls from abortion-minded clients that go something like this. Good morning, ABC Pregnancy Center. How may I help you? This is Terry. Yeah, I need to make an appointment for an abortion. Wait a minute, let's go back. Good morning, ABC Pregnancy Center. May I help you? And for some reason, they're calling us. Why are they calling us? Oh, I remember. There's a God who guides. Yeah, divine appointments, for sure. If you've done Google searches, unless you're paying for it, they're not coming up first. You're not coming up first on that abortion information search that abortion clinic is. But they call who? You. Me. The Planned Parenthood in Austin, Texas has my cell number. And they give it out from time to time to clients. I did not give Planned Parenthood my cell number. I mean, I would have if they'd asked. But I didn't. And they will refer clients to me. I'm driving down the road, pick up the phone. This is Terry. Yeah, Planned Parenthood said for me to call you. Now, you would say probably it's a plan or a fake client. Sure, bring it on. That's fine. But not always. So they call you. Are you prepared? In your secondary handout you have in front of you, there is a sheet that I would ask or suggest that you use as a training tool for training those who answer the phone. That you use this, and I don't have it on the screen, I have it here. That you use this as a training tool for answering the phone. That's why it's called answering the at-risk phone call, assessing the client's intent. We're going to talk a lot today about assessments or evaluation. I would like to know how many of you have some sort of pre-termination or post or abortion-minded assessment tool that you're using as often as you can or real often. Wonderful. Well, if you don't have one, you have one now in that resource packet. But here is just some information that the center personnel should be prepared to share with a caller and or scheduled client who is abortion minded or strongly abortion vulnerable. This client may call seeking an abortion whether by asking for an appointment or referral or states her desire to get an abortion once a positive pregnancy test is read. Now, for those of you who do not see a lot of abortion clients, again, it's going to sound like this. Good morning, ABC Pregnancy Center. This is Terry. How may I help you? Client says, yeah, I'm wondering how much your abortions cost. Or, good morning, ABC Pregnancy Center. This is Terry. How may I help you? And she says, the caller says, yeah, I'm wondering, how do I get to your center, your place? Because I made an appointment there the other day. Now, for some reason, one or two things have happened. She either really made an appointment at your center and no one shared with her, you do not refer for abortions, nor do you perform them, which I think never happens in one of our centers. Or she just called the wrong number. God just guided her right to you. Or she might ask you a question of, do you know where I can get an abortion? And we need to be prepared to answer those questions. This document is something that you can teach and use during training time to help your volunteers, personnel, understand that. So, during a phone call, anyone in here ever had a lengthy, more than, say, 45-second, 45-second conversation with an abortion-minded or vulnerable client on the phone? Look around. If you've not, find these people and talk to them about that experience. Anyone ever had a conversation multiple with an abortion-minded client that they never saw? I'm holding up the number 5. Because in my mind, I can name for you immediately the names of 5 women who were students at Texas State University between the ages 19 and 25 who were abortion-minded. I was not a regular volunteer peer counselor, as we called them at the time, in the center I was the director of. I just answered the phone from time to time. But I can immediately tell you 5 names who I never saw. 4 of them chose life for their baby. 1 of them had a miscarriage. In the name of Jesus. Never saw them. Couldn't get them to come in, Joan. Couldn't find a way for them to find a way to be brave enough to come in. One young lady who had the miscarriage, I was on a, conference call with her daddy when she told her daddy she was pregnant because she didn't want to do it by herself, but I was there. So it's effective ministry on the phone. It most certainly is. It is said that in a suicide hotline, you have about 17 minutes to kind of talk someone out of it. Now I don't know about that. I've never run a suicide hotline. I've talked to a couple of people who felt as if that was their only choice and, you know, tried to get them some help. But I've talked to a lot of girls who felt as if they were standing on the proverbial edge of their life and abortion was the only way out and to make their life okay again. 17 minutes sounds like a lot of time on the phone, but put together, maybe that's what it was, or maybe that was the opportunity. But it's the same sort of thing. Helping them, first of all, in that phone call, to build a relationship with them in some way. To stay with them and not transfer them to someone else because we're in a panic. To come up with some sort of process or policy or just a signal that says to everyone in the room that this is a critical call. Having a room where it is off to the side and maybe quiet and no one can hear if you're in a high abortion-minded kind of market or population. To avoid sort of counselors and psychologists call counter-transference, where we don't begin to panic ourselves with that young lady and think about our own issues and our own self and transfer all of those to her. To help her to realize that this is not, she's not by herself, that we're going to do this together as a team. You said, well, no, wait a minute, Terry, you said to stay with her. No, that's not what I mean by a team. That it goes from, I need an abortion, I need to know where to find one, I need to make an appointment, to, we're going to do this together. To help them to come up with a plan, even on the phone, that says, this is what I'm going to do as soon as I hang up. Maybe if I'm going to get in the car and come and see you. Oh, I hope so, because I would love to see you and I'd love to spend that time with you. But, or maybe it's, I'm going to go into my mother's bedroom and I'm going to sit on her bed and I'm going to say, Mom, I have something to tell you and I need some help. Maybe it's to call your boyfriend and say, dude, we should have spent more time on the edge of the bed. We are pregnant. What are we going to do about it? I know this place that can help us. What that plan would be. Being ready for a wrench to be thrown in it when the girl you've been talking to on the phone, who's called you every morning at 9 a.m., calls you one morning to tell you that she had a miscarriage. And how are you going to help her with that? Maybe that's what it is. Just things that you can do to build that relationship. Maybe it's simply listening. To her tell the same story over and over and over how she was just an innocent freshman in college. And she didn't know that if she went to a party, she tried, Miss Terry. She tried so hard to avoid the cans of beer because she was a good girl and she was underage and she wasn't going to drink any of that alcohol. But she didn't realize that you can also put drugs inside of Coke cans. And so surely, Miss Terry, someone put something in her Coke can and she drank it, and then she woke up one the next morning and she was in a stranger's bed. And sometime later, she missed her period and she was pregnant. I heard that story from that young lady at least 22 times. She wanted to validate her own actions. She wanted me to understand that her life needed to be changed when it came to pregnancy. And although I didn't agree with her decision to maybe go through with an abortion, she knew that, but that I understood she had a choice to not normalize abortion itself, although it's fairly normal, right? But to just normalize the thoughts that she had about that abortion over and over again, because it's her story, and it plays and it plays and it plays over and over again. On the phone. So again, this document here just gives you sort of some scenarios that you can go through with your staff, with your receptionist, with your board members. How fun would it be, executive director, if you created this as a role play and at a board meeting, instead of giving a boring report, no, just kidding, instead of giving a report, that you said, we're going to role play tonight what we do in the pregnancy center, inviting a couple of volunteers to come with you, with permission, of course, from your board chair, just in case they want to, you know, do something weird beforehand, and you doing some role play with them, and you talking about answering the phone, which is that oftentimes that first point of contact, that first point of contact, okay? And then talking about being intentional in that first client, or that what we're going to call the initial client visit. Now, each of us are autonomous when it comes to our Pregnancy Resource Center and how we get information from a client, right? It's very official. How many of you use what we would call a basic request for services form, where the client comes in and just fills out that basic information, you know, name, address, phone number, all that kind of stuff? How many of you do one of those? Then you take that information and you take it with you, and then in the counseling room, you very discreetly, without letting her know, you're writing down what she's wearing and what the color of her eyes are in a very, very, very objective way. Of course, you're recording some information, so you do sort of what we call an intake form. Now, if you're medical, you might call it a medical intake form or whatever, and you're taking all of that information. Are you intentional about that? Have you really looked at your forms lately and said to yourself, why are we asking this question? How many of you have done that recently? Okay. Who wants to just volunteer with something they recently took off that no one really knew why they had it on there? Yes, ma'am.
Our director just took the UZ Kairos.
Uh-huh.
And she just took the whole form and just redid the whole thing.
Yeah.
We don't need
good for her.
All the demographics stuff. She doesn't care how much. We don't care how much money they make. We don't care. The only one was a male or female.
Right. Kind of shorten it a little bit.
And, I don't know. She cut out probably over 50%.
Her director just went through and cut out some things they felt like they weren't going to use. Now, if you're in an area where you are maybe receiving state funds and you get, monies back for people who are in lower income, you're going to need some of that information, right? But really intentionally looking at. But what I really want to ask you is this. How many of you have added some things that have never been on before that you felt would help you with an abortion-minded client? Who wants to share one of those? Okay, yes, ma'am, in the kind of blue thingy with glasses.
We changed the the current fiscal year. But instead of just asking when they first became sexually active, we also ask when they first were in a relationship, because we can figure out the years that are slipping. They're sexually active before they ever consider themselves in a relationship. And so that's something that we just help us kind of see where they came from and what their mindset was. So that's something we can.
All right. She said that they added, when were you first in a relationship with an individual? And because they found out in our hookup world, everyone knows what that is, right? Okay. Ask me later if you don't. In our hookup world, which I know you do, that kind of flipped. There's sex before relationship. Especially if you are intentional about talking to them about their what? Relationships. Are you intentional about talking to them about marriage? Are you intentional about talking to them about not having sex prior to marriage if they have a negative test? Do you have an intentionality about that as well? All right? So you see what I'm saying? Looking at those forms. Do you have on your intake form or even on your request for services form, or maybe prior to them even coming in, if they indicate prior to an appointment? So let me repeat that. Do you have on your request for services form that general information, or the initial, that you know, the intake form within the counseling room, or maybe a form at your front desk when they call and want an abortion, but they come in for an appointment to verify their pregnancy or get a free ultrasound or just to chat? Do you have some sort of assessment or evaluation so that you can identify those who are abortion-minded or abortion-vulnerable? Do you have a pre-termination or an abortion minor? Well, guess what? You have one now. In fact, you have two in your resource guide. These are not anything I made up all by myself. Took them and sort of generalized them for you so that you can use them. Can you make copies of them and make them your own? Everyone nod and say, hallelujah, I got a free resource. See? And you didn't even have to go to the exhibitor's hall and pass up the chocolate, okay? So, yes, those forms there are just some assessments that you can use. So let's sit here for a few minutes and in practicality, kind of talk about how you can use those, right? First one is title, and they're both basically pretty much the same. Again, let's first of all talk about how you can use this assessment of a client's abortion risk level, all right? You can use this while you're talking on the phone with that client and quietly take notes. Now, I would advise you not to say, excuse me, honey, wait a minute, I got to write down that you think that, you know, no. You need to get very proficient at that, and that would be the reason why, according to our last slide, you got to practice with one another and maybe at home in front of the mirror. It works. It's funny how you figure things out in front of the mirror, like how many wrinkles you have on your face. But again, and then this form, what I like about it is that it kind of gives a number to it. I've seen centers who will label AB1, which means that, or AB, I think they do it AB2, so that's abortion-minded, but they're likely to carry, you know, AB5, which means they're abortion-vulnerable. Does that make sense from that little form down there? And you can do that however it is that you want to do it, but use this. You can also shorten this assessment and make it a 3 to 4 question assessment and have it in that intake room when you're asking her about her life, when you're getting to know her, when you're asking her questions like, you know, when was the first day of your last period, and things like that. When you're asking, you can ask those questions. Now, if we have a positive pregnancy test today, what are your intentions for this pregnancy? If you had to choose today what you would do with this pregnancy, what would your first choice be? And so you can ask those questions in that intake form, or you can just hand her the form and ask it to her. That would be my least favorite. because I'm like out here instead of back here, right? I'm very relational and I want to talk to you about that. But if quickness or just your market kind of lends itself that way, you can. There are two different types there that you are welcome to use. I want to hear from you, though, about some successes that you have had, and maybe you've not. So I haven't been in a pregnancy center doing day-to-day work in a few years, so I don't have some stories about this kind of assessment, although I know it works because I've heard it does, and I get to go to the meetings. But how many of you have used this maybe on the phone to prepare volunteers, your advocates or your counselors? Anyone used it and wants to share a story with us, and I'll repeat it? Anyone used a phone one? Okay. Would you mind standing? But I'll repeat what you say, but then they can see your pretty face.
We use a form that looks very similar to this, but we have three boxes. So the receptionist will check anything that might apply, and then our nurse will check anything that applies, and then a client advocate will check anything that applies. Because we've had a few clients that will call saying, I would like to have an abortion, and then when they see the nurse, they'll say, well, I don't really know what I'm going to do, and then by the time they see the advocate, they go, oh, I would never abort. That's not improvement. So we kind of try to have a good feel for what the client is doing. Understandably, they can just be undecided, and by the next day, they change their mind.
Basically, what she says for the recording is that they have a place on that form for everyone that's going to possibly see the client to record information. Because again, even, and we're hoping, when that client's in an environment that's loving and caring and compassionate, they change their mind, or they get, you know, they get, well, maybe I could, or they see the baby and they go, like I had one client one time say, who's very abortion-minded, when she saw that baby, she went, I guess now I have to keep it. By the way, now she is a midwife and has four children. So it worked, right? Okay. We're going to have to go a little faster, so that's what I'm going to do right now. When we talk about the initial client visit, anybody want to tell me what FPC means besides Joan? Female pregnancy client. Because it's important for you to see. And that's not on your handout, by the way. I've added some things because I had to turn this thing in the 1st of August so they could make copies. And that's not fair because the Holy Spirit speaks to me last night. So anyway. But I've added something to that. And that would be the MPC. Anyone want to know what an MPC is or want to take a guess? Come on now. Tell me what you think it is. Really? Now, I'm not here to tell you, give you a newsflash that men get pregnant, but I think you learned this morning, if you haven't figured it out yet, it takes two to tango. And we at CareNet know that in order for a woman to make an informed decision that will make her a whole person is to have a whole family and to include the man. Can I get an amen? Amen. This is not a workshop on male programs, you know, ministering to males. No, you don't have this one. I added it too because on Monday, we sent our services specialist met with Clark Caton, delightful young man, who's with Life Choices Health Network in Joplin, Missouri. Anyone heard of that place? Yeah. And Clark gave us this statement. Just listen to it when I read it, and then you can copy it. If we are going to rescue a generation of children, isn't that what we want? Who wants to save all the babies in the world? We must redeem a generation of men. Who got chills? If we are going, I know, you're so with me back there, I'm just going to take you home with me. If we are going to rescue a generation of children, we must redeem a generation of men. Here's two things I want you to remember. Number one, you have to think about the men. because they are his part. As Clark put it, and he quoted Rollins, that man was all in, enthusiastically in, at the point of conception. Yeah, I know. Sorry, darling. Yeah. Why not help him to be all in until that child, praise God, goes off to college? Right? Or at least until he's born and that man can hold that baby in his arms and then it's all over, right? How about that? And then something else I'd like for you to take away with you, and this is shocking because we in the center that I was a director at, we had men. We took care of men. We had STD testing. We loved the dads, but we were always just kind of pro-woman. Power to the women. How about being pro-people? Say that with me. Pro-people. Because doesn't that mean the man, the woman, and the child? Yes, it does. Okay. Going back to this point here, make sure that the center tools and resources that you use, you know, again, these evaluations, these assessments, you know, if you need someone to look at them, ask the center next to you, you know, in the same city. What do you think this looks like? Have you used this? How does this work for you? You know, get on our community page and the website, the CareNet website. Say, look, I'm thinking about doing this. How does this work for you? If you need a tool, ask us. We want to send one to you. I mean, obviously, if we can convince Vincent to dress up in a pink women's t-shirt, and I'll never get over that, then we are serious about providing you with the resources that you need. And then finally, follow up with her, even if she's abortion-minded client. But we always do that with what? Permission. Permission-based care. Can I call you? Can I text you? And make sure that works. All right. We talked about NPCs. Number three is we're going to plan to succeed. That's pretty easy, right? We're going to learn from others. How many of you meet on a regular basis or monthly or at least four times a year with other pregnancy center volunteers, staff members, board members? How many of you do that? Well, you should, because it's fun. You get to go to lunch. I mean, who doesn't like to go to lunch, right? And so meet with them. Network with them. Ask them to bring their newest resources. Don't be jealous of their statistics. Figure out how you can get them to be like yours. Or ask God what He would have you to do in your center. Okay? Again, when you're working with a client, listen, don't lecture, speak the truth. Know the law. Please know the law. If you don't, y'all, I'm telling you, find a lawyer who does, or call Eve Gleason at CareNet. She knows everything. And she's going to kill me for saying that, but she'll find it out for you. Ask permission. Prepare for the unexpected. I want to talk a little bit about adverse situations. That's going to be as someone who says, I was raped. My father's abusing me. Oh, by the way, I think I'm really a lesbian. Are y'all prepared for that? Well, you should be, because we're seeing it more and more and more. Are you going to service them? Are you going to be like the center I've been talking to that has volunteers who are threatening to walk out if they serve lesbians or males or transgenders? Shake your head and say, oh, my Lord Jesus. No, you may not want to say that. But are they people? So what are we? Are we just pro-baby? No. Say no. No. Are we just pro-woman? No. Well, we know we're not just pro-man. But we're pro what? People. We're pro people. Make sure you have some assessments in place. I can send you some. Ask some questions. My husband's beating me. How can we help you? What are the hotlines? And then, of course, you're going to have to set some boundaries, though, about how far you can go. Be careful that you don't go off mission. How many of you have heard that and you're kind of sick of it? Finally, make sure you pay attention to relationships and learn from your mistakes. Now we're going to use our resources wisely. I'm going to skip through this really fast because I'm not going to put on a pink t-shirt or wear a headband and do a dance. I could, but they didn't ask me. But are you using some pamphlets? How many of you have already How many of you use this? Raise your hand. Do you not like the new cover? It's wonderful. Okay, it's great. Is it a little more expensive? Yes, but you can do it. All right? Can you find creative ways to use it? Please do, and let us know what those are. Put that on the forum so that we can look at it, the community page. Send me an email, and I'll put it on there. How many of you already have done the BYD Live app? I want to hear from one person about how it has been effective in changing the life of an abortion-minded client. Who wants to tell me a story? Anyone? Oh, no. Where? Okay, yes, ma'am.
Well, using the app.
Can you stand?
Yeah.
Because then we can all hear a little better, and then I'll repeat.
Using the app and using those videos, you know, the old way, if we wanted them to watch abortion procedures video, you're talking 22 minutes.
Okay.
There's so much more apt to sit there. You know, can I show you a 5-minute video of your options? Can I show you this 5-minute video of abortion procedures? They're going to agree to that so much quicker. I've had a college couple that sat down together with the iPad.
Wow.
And watched those abortion procedures. Mm-hmm. So it's in their hands, it's just right there. You know, listen, this will just take a few minutes. I don't have to put a DVD in the TV and hope that it's going to cooperate today, and spend 22 minutes. So that's one of the biggest pluses for us, is time is valuable, and they're more likely to do that.
It is current, it's up to date, it has short videos that you can use, and if you're technologically, your TV laughs at you or your remote does when you pick it up, you can just say, here, you can, and they can work it better than you can. You know? Again, and it's effective. Excellent. Had a college couple looking at it. Finally, the last point is another thing my daddy would tell me. When I would worry about my friends and my boyfriends and caterpillars and puppy dogs and whales, and even now today, if I would say to him, Daddy, the work that I'm doing seems to be so daunting and we've not made much headway, he would say, Terry, when was the last time you gave it to Jesus? You know what? I had that very discussion with my father just recently about an issue in my life. And he said, Terry, when was the last time you gave it to Jesus? And so we did at that point. But have you given your clients to Jesus? I mean, literally. Now, remember, living sacrifices have a way of crawling off the altar. So you're not just still holding on to them, right? You're giving them away. There's a story in the Bible about the blind Bartimaeus. You know that story. He's sitting on the side of the road. Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem. I want you to remember that. He's on his way to Jerusalem. He's got a little job to do in a little while. Anybody know what that is? He's going to be crucified for my sins. But he's on his way to Jerusalem. He's got a task to do, a job for the Father, the God of the universe. And the blind Bartimaeus says, Son of David, have mercy on me. And Jesus stops and said, call him over. And so they call the blind man and cheer up, on your feet, he's calling you. And Jesus asked him, what do you want for me to do? And the blind man said, Father, I want to see. Go, said Jesus, your faith has healed you. And Jesus went on and he was healed. And the client says, I need to have an abortion. And you say, well, we don't do those here, click. And the client says, do you know where I can get an abortion at? And you say, oh, honey, I don't look those things up. And click. Instead of saying, you know, again, my name is Terry, and I'm so glad you called us today. We don't do abortions at ABC Pregnancy Center, but there's so much we do. May I share those with you? Oh, I don't know where they do abortions in our city, but I do know here we do this and so much more. Do you have time to come in today and get a verification of pregnancy and a free ultrasound? You know, we don't we're only given a certain amount of time in our clients' lives, and you know the average appointment lasts 45 minutes. But I want you to think about it just being a minute, because I don't know how long it took for Jesus to heal the blind Bartimaeus. Didn't seem very long at all. Maybe it was just a moment in time when Jesus was walking past and the blind man called out to him, "I only have a minute, 30 seconds in it. Didn't seek it, didn't choose it, but it's up to me to use it. Give an account if I abuse it." Just a tiny little minute, yet eternity is in it. Just a minute. Can I just say to you a minute, just for a minute, my friend, on the phone? Would you come in just for a 30-minute discussion? Can I have a minute of your time to share a video about abortion procedures? About five. Can we talk just a little bit about all of your choices and not just the abortion choice? Can I talk to you about parenting and how we can help you? Can I talk to you about adoption and the referrals that I have? I only have a minute, 30 seconds in it. Didn't seek it, didn't choose it, but it's up to me to use it. Give an account if I abuse it. Just a tiny little minute, yet eternity is in it. Hope you felt validated and loved today. You know that you're unique and you're important, and I hope you took away one thing. I need one thing from you, though, before you leave. You have to fill out that evaluation, or I will not, no one will take me to dinner tonight. So I need some help. I'm available. I'll stay here for a little bit. I'd love to talk to you. God bless you. God bless you. God bless you. God bless you.